Hey, now I'm on. Well, when Eric and Rod asked me to preach, all they told me was the passage. You do whatever I want. So when I was reading 1 and 2 Samuel when I was a kid, I think I was like 13 years old, I would get lost. And there'd be like names, every chapter there'd be a name, and I'm like, he sounds familiar. I don't remember who he was. Let's just move on. And I thought it'd be great if I could just keep track of all those names. And I feel like I've sort of been lost in this mid of 1 and 2 Samuel. So we're going to do a quick review. So 1 Samuel was about the first king of Israel, and his name was... I'm sort of doing this in the sort of the mode of my Bible study. It doesn't work unless you work. So first king was?
Saul.
Tell me something about Saul.
Warrior,
okay.
Tall.
Good, that's pretty much all we know. So, was he handsome? Okay, all right. Well, that came later, yes. And he was pretty insecure. Okay. All right. And Saul was the first king, and he reigned for 42 years. And 1 Samuel is just basically about his life. Well, we start with Samuel, but we're skipping that part. So, and Saul was going great until he did one thing. What was Saul's downfall? Does anybody remember? What did he do? Nope.
What?
Yes, sheep offered sacrifices.
He went to get counsel from a witch.
Well, that was later. Okay, that was much later. But yeah. Well, that was true too. But his downfall was the sheep. He was the Philistines were amassing a huge army, like all of them, and he went out to meet them. And he was waiting for Samuel to come and do the sacrifice thing before they go out and attack. And all his men were like leaving like flies. And he was waiting and waiting and waiting, and Samuel didn't come, and he was like nervous. So he did the sacrifice himself, which wasn't allowed. If you're not a Levite, you don't do sacrifices. He was a Benjamite. So from then on, Samuel basically said, you screwed up. God's going to take your kingdom away. You're no longer king. But he held on for a long time. So the new king comes up, and the new king is? Okay. And what did David's claim to fame?
Goliath.
Okay. Tell me something about David. What was he like?
Shepherd.
Small. Okay.
Plays the harp.
Writes poetry. He was the youngest of seven brothers, yes. And he had a ruddy complexion, which I don't know what that means. But he was handsome. So, okay. What's that? Oh, is that what it means? Red skin? Okay. So David kills Goliath, and he's the up-and-coming guy, and Samuel anoints him to be king, but he doesn't become king because Saul is still holding on to it, and Saul just chases David. And that's most of the second half of 1 Samuel, is him chasing David and David running away. And at the end of 1 Samuel, Saul is killed in battle. And that's the end of that book. The second book, 2 Samuel, is about David. And it starts off, let me see, Saul is dead. Where am I? 2 Samuel 1, somewhere around there. So Saul is dead, and then Abner, who was Saul's general, now that Saul's dead, he's the general, but there's no king, so he runs over and gets Saul's son, Ish-bosheth, and he anoints him king. And there's sort of a civil war. Well, not really a civil war. There's a split in Israel. David becomes king of Judah, and Ishbosheth becomes the king of everything else. And there's a little civil war, and I think it goes on for like a couple of years or something like that. And then there's a little battle, and Abner, the king, the general over Ishbosheth, comes down and kills one of Joab's brothers in this little skirmish. So, but then Abner figures out that the cards are turning and David is now going to be the big guy. So he changes sides and comes to David and says, yep, you're right. We're going to give you the whole kingdom. You were right. I'm wrong. I'll join forces with you. And so Abner and David make peace, and David becomes king of all of Israel. But when Abner was leaving, Joab was still pretty mad about his brother being killed, and he goes over and kills Abner. And what does David do in response to that? Does anybody remember? Well, he mourns. But what did he do to Joab for killing Abner? Nope, he didn't have him killed. Well, almost nothing. He made him march in the funeral parade, sort of led the funeral parade for the guy he just killed, which is like basically nothing. He should have died, but he didn't get killed. Yes, he did. Okay? That's something. So after Abner gives the kingdom to David, then some other guys come over and kill Saul's son, Ishbosheth. So David is indeed king of over Israel and Judah. And the first 10 chapters of 2 Samuel is about him becoming king, and then it's about all the great things he does. David conquers everybody. Everybody that surrounds Israel is pretty much under David's control. He just goes out and whips butt. And everything's doing fine. And then we get to 2 Samuel chapter 11, and this is David's downfall. This is the one pivotal moment in this book that sort of splits the book in half. First 10 chapters are about these good things about David, and the next 10 chapters are about his sin and what the repercussions of that are. And what was David's sin?
Bathsheba.
Oh, everybody knows this. So David sleeps with Bathsheba, even though she's a married woman. And there's a problem because she has a husband. And then she gets pregnant. So then he has Joab, the guy who's good at murdering people. So he has Joab sort of make sure that her husband doesn't return from battle, and he doesn't. So then he takes Bathsheba as his wife, and this is all very, very secret. Until a prophet comes, what was his name? Nathan. And he tells him a little story, and his famous quote is, "You are the man." Points the finger at David. And he gives three promises from God. The repercussion from your sin, three things will happen. Number one, the sword will not depart from your house. Number two, your wives, he had lots of them, will be taken. And number three, Bathsheba's first child will die. And the child does die, and David mourns, but then he comforts her, and she has a second child, and that's Solomon, which is the next book. So now, after David's sin, the rest of the book is sort of about the repercussions of that. And David, in the first part of the book, he's this bold, victorious guy going out, taking control, doing all these great things. But in the second half of the book, I'm going to use the word impotent. He's sort of become impotent from his sin. And it's not just because of his sin, but the entire nation knows about his sin. Because he confesses it, and God forgives him of it, but he still has to live with it. So the next chapter, his son does exactly the same thing that he does. He sleeps with somebody he's not supposed to sleep with. i.e. his half-sister, Tamar. So, who was that? Amnon sleeps with his half-sister, Tamar. And she doesn't want it to happen. She screams, but he does it anyway, sort of rapes her. And then Tamar's brother, Absalom, gets really mad. So what did David do about Amnon raping his sister? Nothing. What can he say? He has no right to say anything. He just took Bathsheba and had her husband killed. How could he possibly correct his children when he has such sin like that? So he doesn't do anything. But his other son, Absalom, is really mad. And like a couple of years later, kills Amnon. And then he's afraid, so he runs away. And he's gone for 2 years from David, hiding from David. And David's really upset about Amnon being dead and upset that his son Absalom is gone, but he doesn't do anything about it. So, and then Joab, who is his general, likes Absalom. This is kind of bizarre. Joab likes Absalom and wants to help him. So Joab arranges this little trick on David to get him to bring Absalom back. And it works. And Absalom comes back, but David won't look at him. So then Absalom tries to get Joab to come help him again because David's not talking to him. And what did Absalom do to get Joab's attention? He burned his field down, which got his attention, but pretty ticked him off, I'm sure. So here's Joab, who likes Absalom, and then he gets his field burned down, but he still helps him. And so Absalom comes back, David now talks to him, kisses him, things are supposed to be back to normal, but then Absalom doesn't feel good about it. He rebels again, and he takes over the entire kingdom. What was the one thing that he did to win the hearts of the Israelites, to bring them away from David onto him? Yes. So he acted, well, he made himself known, but the judge thing, he didn't really act like a judge, but when people from all over Israel, from the tribes outside of Judah where David was, came in to get some representation, some justice from David, Absalom says, there's nobody here to help you. There's nobody here that will listen to you. Basically, David doesn't care about your problems. But if I were king, if I were judge, then you'd be taken care of. So because of that, this little lie that he plants into the hearts of the Israelites, they all turn against him, and they turn towards Absalom. And Absalom runs away with the kingdom. David finds out about it, that his son Absalom has been anointed king by the Israelites, and David flees to Mahanaim. And it's interesting to me that David, who used to be like courageous and go out and conquer everybody, is now running away from his own city. And I thought, okay. So he runs away to this other stronghold place, and then all of Israel comes out and battles against him, and Joab and Abishai defeat all of Israel. But Joab did something that he wasn't supposed to do, and that was he killed Absalom, David's son, which David told him not to do. So what did David do in response to that? Well, he took away his generalship, yeah. He took away his job and gave it to someone else. And he gave it to Amasa, which these are all like nephews of David. They're all like relatives of his, yeah. So he takes it away from Joab and gives it back to Absalom, to Amasa. And then we come to our book, which is 2 Samuel 11. And in the very tail end of the last chapter, David's coming back from this big battle that he won. And he comes down to the Jordan River, and all the Israel said, well, let's invite David to be king back for us. So Hur heard about that rumor, but he invited Judah to come and escort him across the river, his own tribe. So he invites his own tribe to come over and bring him across the river. And he gets across the river, and all of Israel shows up and says, why didn't we get invited to come bring you across? So they have this big argument, and I wanted to read, where was it? Let me read this one verse. Am I in the right chapter? No, we should be in chapter 19. That's where I'm in the wrong one. So all verse 41, soon all the men of Israel were coming to the king and saying to him, why did our brothers, the men of Judah, steal the king away and bring him to the household across the Jordan together with his men? So the men of Israel ask David, why did this happen? And David doesn't respond. The men of Judah respond. And then the men of Israel respond back, and they get this argument about who's better and why they should, who should have taken responsibility and things like that. So they're fighting over King David. And then we start in chapter 20. And, okay. So starting in verse 1. Now a troublemaker named Sheba, son of Bichri, a Benjamite, happened to be there. He sounded the trumpet and shouted, we have no share in David, no part in Jesse's son. Every man to his tent, O Israel. So, is this a true statement? Do the Israelites have no part in David? It's not a true statement? So, I guess why does it appear to them that they have no part in his kingdom? He's not taking any action. Okay. What could have David done to prevent this rebel from taking over? Right. He could have invited Israel and been more reconciliatory towards them. Yeah. Okay. And so the Israelites, the history of the Israelites were when they came up out of Egypt, they were like 1 million people, and God separated them all into the little tribes. And they all stayed in the little tribes because that was the one easy way to manage them. They were all in their tribes. And when they came into Israel and took it over, they all had their own little tribes, their own little tract of land. And it's sort of like the United States in the fact that we have 50 states, but we have one government. We're all Americans, but we're Arizonans. And not just Arizonans, we're Tucsonans. We're not like those Phoenix people. So we have our own little tribes. We're always breaking ourselves up into it and separating ourselves. And so, but when disaster happens in one part of our country, the rest of our country runs to aid and help, things like that. Sort of like Israel and things like that. It happened there too. But what kind of tribes do we as Christians put ourselves into? What kind of, the what?
Denominations.
Okay. And I guess I hear that a lot. And I sense a lot of pride in the fact that we're villagers, that we're not like the other churches. And that's a good thing. I think we have some really good things here. I, for one, don't want to get up on Sunday morning. So... So I'm probably stuck. I'm never can't go anywhere else because I don't want to get up on Sunday mornings. But you know, there's some good things we do here, but there's no reason that we should ever separate ourselves from other tribes of Christians. Because we all serve one king. Or, well, in their case, they were serving the king, but they should have been serving God, not the king. But we serve one God. The God of the Catholics is the God of us, is the God of the Lutherans, is the God of whoever. We're all brothers and sisters in Christ. We're just like Abraham's sons. We're all one big family. And Hur this family is bickering amongst themselves over who gets the rightful share of David. So, okay. So verse 2. So all the men of Israel deserted David to follow Sheba, son of Bichri. But the men of Judah stayed by their king all the way from the Jordan to Jerusalem. When David returned to his palace in Jerusalem, he took the 10 concubines he had left to take care of the palace and put them in a house under guard. He provided for them, but he did not lie with them. They were kept in confinement till the day of their death, living as widows. And what happened to the concubines that he left behind? Yes, Absalom slept with every one of them in public. So David put them away, locked them up, and cared for them until they died. Why did he lock them up? Why did he put them under guard and shut them up? No. So what? So they couldn't talk about it, but they were his, but couldn't they go to the... They had slept with his son, so okay. But couldn't they have like roamed around the house and gone to the market? Hiding his shame. If people saw these concubines, they would remember what happened. And it's maybe not his shame, but also the shame of his son Absalom. So he's trying to cover up and hide this sin that happened in his family. That's a good question.
Did he die somewhere?
Well, who wrote this book? I mean, yeah, it's like, why did Nathan come and why didn't Samuel come? But, you know, actually, at the end of, it was when Saul became king. It was because Samuel was very old. So Samuel, is he still alive?
He's dead.
Well, there he is. Right, right. He died a long time ago. That's right. He died in the first book. Okay. So, but where are the other prophets like Nathan and other priests that would bring up these things and confront David? So Nathan did it once, but it seems like, you know, did David have anybody around him to confront him? But this thing that happened to the concubines, it's horrible. It's horrible what happened to them. But David's response to it seems even equally as bad. They just locked them up for the rest of their lives. So what could have been done differently? Does anybody have any ideas? What's that? Well, yeah, it should have. And that's the whole problem. Multiple wives. You know, his desire for multiple wives caused his downfall. Yes?
I think
that's true. It could have. Maybe it wasn't. I guess the significance was that he put guards on them. Maybe so. That's probably true. Good point. Nope. So.
I think maybe.
Okay.
Okay.
We're going to protect them from now on. So the other, yes. That was, yes. He. Why did he leave the concubines behind? No, to guard his palace. Come on, he's fleeing the whole city, but he wants his palace to be taken care of by the women. So which was more important, his concubines or his palace? Well, his palace was more important to him than his concubines. So, yes? Yes.
I think he was just trying to keep them from ever
laying
the
whole thing.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting because it seems to say that he has now put them as the wives of his son now that he's left with them.
Okay.
That they're no longer his.
And they're his dead. Place. Yeah, and the son's dead, so therefore they are widows.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. But it would be shameful even more if somebody else took them as wives again. So, okay. So yeah, the mistake's already been made. There's really not much to do now that it's over type of thing. So, okay. Verse 4. Then the king said to Amasa, summon the men of Judah to come with me, to come to me within 3 days, and be here yourself. But when Amasa went to summon Judah, he took longer than the time the king had set for him. So, who did he ask to go get the troops? Amasa. And he didn't ask Joab, his old general. So, Joab's been fired, he's been replaced with Amasa, and now for the first time he's calling his new general, Amasa, to come do it. So, and Amasa is David's nephew. Okay. All right. And verse 5. 7. David said to Abishai, now Sheba, son of Bichri, will do us more harm than Absalom did. Take your master's men and pursue him, or he will find fortified cities and escape from us. So Joab's men and the Kerethites and the Pelethites and all the mighty warriors went out under the command of Abishai. They marched out from Jerusalem to pursue Sheba, son of Bichri. So this is the second time he sends somebody out. And who does he send this time?
Joab.
Nope. Abishai, which is Joab's brother. Which is even more of a slap in the face for Joab, that he's sending his younger brother to take his place. So, and which is also David's nephew. They're all his nephews. He has a big family. So, yeah, he had 7 brothers, and yeah, there was something else about his dad. He has half-sisters who gave birth to these 2 brothers. And I don't know how he had half-sisters, but I couldn't figure that out. Like, his mother slept with 2 guys. I don't know. But anyway, maybe his dad had 2 wives or something. So, so why did David send the second general? Right. But it's only been 3 days. I guess he has this fear, and this fear is that this guy, Sheba, is going to get a run on him. And it's only been 3 days. And it seems strange to me that when Absalom came, he fled, and he wasn't really much of a hurry, but now that Sheba's come, all of a sudden he's in a panic. And everything's got to be done in 3 days. And I was just sort of reminded to myself of, like, when Saul was waiting for something to happen, waiting to go to battle, and things weren't happening on the schedule that he waited 9 days for Samuel to come, and he got impatient. And here's David, sort of in the same camp, in the fact that he's having to wait on this other guy, Amasa. But he's impotent in the fact that why doesn't he just take his own troops and go out there? He sends a second general out. So, okay. All right, verse 8. While they were at the great rock in Gibeon, Amasa came to meet them. Joab was wearing his military tunic. Strapped over it at his waist was a belt with a dagger in its sheath. And as he stepped forward, it dropped out of its sheath. So who sent Joab? Nobody sent Joab. Joab just snuck along. Huh, that's interesting. Joab said to Amasa, "How are you, my brother?" They were really brothers. Then Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him. Amasa was not on his guard against the dagger in Joab's hand, and Joab plunged it into his belly, and his intestines spilled out onto the ground. Without being stabbed again, Amasa died. Then Joab and his brother Abishai pursued Sheba, son of Bichri. So Joab murders Amasa. So why did Joab murder Amasa? What did he have against Amasa? He wanted to be general again. I'm sorry? Right, his younger brother took his job, but he wasn't threatened by that, yes? Okay. But now he did. Right. But the only reason he met Amasa is because Amasa did show up a little bit later with all the troops. So he did show up. But yeah, the real reason we shouldn't trust Amasa was that Amasa was whose general? Absalom's general on the opposing side. Joab had just fought a battle against Amasa like, I don't know, a month ago, and whooped him, and now Amasa is leading David's forces. So, but the main reason Joab killed Amasa was he wanted his job back. He didn't want Amasa to be taken over the job, so, okay? And so, okay. Verse 11. One of Joab's men stood beside Amasa and said, "Whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, let him follow Joab." Amasa lay wallowing in his blood in the middle of the road, and the man saw that all the troops came to a halt there. When he realized that everyone who came up to Amasa stopped, he dragged him from the road into a field and threw a garment over him. After Amasa had been removed from the road, all the men went on with Joab to pursue Sheba, son of Bichri. So this guy, this one of Joab's men, makes this challenge to people and says, if you're for David, then you should be for Joab, and we're going to go get Sheba. So whoever's for David, follow Joab. And I guess I've heard this before in other churches. People have challenged me, and I was wondering if anybody else has sort of felt this way of having this gauntlet throw down. It's like, well, if you're for God, then you should follow my lead. And I felt this, and other people have said this to me. Has anybody else felt themselves in that situation where they're sort of challenged? If you're a Christian, then you should do what I say. Has that ever been happened to anybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Right. Then you should. You should follow the leader.
But
unless, of course.
The trick is, you said your pastor.
Right.
When somebody comes to you who is not your pastor and says, you should follow me if you want to follow God, that's what.
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
Well, yes, but I guess someone you don't trust or you don't know is asking for your obedience.
Yeah,
something like that. And this is the worst case scenario here. Someone who's just murdered someone is asking for your obedience. Oh, if you're for the king, you should follow me. don't look at that guy down there on the ground. Pay no attention to the man behind the garment over there. We're off to do the king's bidding, you know? And it's like, and I felt really bad for those soldiers. And they'd stop, they'd come by, and whenever they came by the dead man, they would stop and look, and I was thinking, you know, I'd have several thoughts going through my head. So, and do you think the soldiers were, did they have a choice? If they had said, no, I'm not going to follow you, did they have a fear that something might like that happen to them as well? So,
they were confused.
Right. They were probably confused, but also pretty darn afraid of Joab. I think everybody's afraid of Joab. Nobody wants to be the next guy under the garment, so. Okay. So, okay. Sheba passed through all the tribes of Israel. And I wanted to have a map. I didn't do a map thing, because I like maps. Whenever you read like cities and stuff like that, you should find out where the city is and where they were and where they were going. So they were down in Jerusalem, and they went just a little tiny ways up into, where did they go, to Gilead? Where was the rock at? So, Gibeon. They went up a little ways to Gibeon and met there. And then they followed Sheba, and Sheba went through every tribe in Israel. So they were towards the bottom, and he wakes his way all the way up to the last tribe, Dan. He's way up in the very top, and he goes through all the tribes, all the entire regions of tribes of Israel, to Abel Beth Makkah, and through the entire region of the Barites. And the Barites, from what we can understand, is one of the families in the tribe of Dan. There was a guy named Bera who had some kids, and they called him Barites, who gathered together and followed him. All the troops with Joab came and besieged Sheba in Abel Beth Makkah, and they built a siege ramp up to the city, and it stood against the outer fortifications. While they were battering the wall to bring it down, a wise woman called from the city, "Listen, listen, tell Joab to come here so I can speak to him." He went towards her and she asked, "Are you Joab?" "I am." She said, "Listen to what your servant has to say." "I'm listening," he said. She continued, and I love her little presentation here. "Long ago they used to say, 'Get your answer at Abel.' And that settled it. We are the peaceful and faithful in Israel. You are trying to destroy a city that is a mother in Israel. Why do you want to swallow up the Lord's inheritance?" So here's this woman. She's not like the mayor of the city. I don't know what happened to the mayor of the city. Seems like if somebody started building a fortifications up against my wall, you would like try to find out why they're doing this, but nobody stopped to ask or something like that. And so this woman figured out that I don't want to die. So she comes up with this thing, and she has this great argument. She introduces herself and the city and how the city is a great city. If you had an argument, you go to Abel and that settles it. They were a place where the wise people of Abel could settle arguments. You bring your case, and they settle it for you. They're a great city. People from all around would come there. We are a peaceful and faithful in Israel. You are trying to destroy a city that is a mother in Israel. What does she mean by a mother in Israel? Anybody have an idea? Okay. So I think the other idea is, it's the mother in the fact that the surrounding areas come to them for nourishment. It's like the county seat or something like that. It's the one that takes care of the whole area. This is the mother city around that whole area. And you're trying to destroy the Lord's, swallow up the Lord's inheritance. Does anybody know what the Lord's inheritance is? So I had to look this up. 1 Samuel 10:1. This is interesting. So, Then Samuel took a flask of oil and poured it on Saul's head and kissed him, saying, "Has not the Lord anointed you leader over his inheritance?" So inheritance can mean two things. It could mean God's people, the Israelites, or it could also mean the land. So Saul was anointed king over the land and over the people of Israel. So she's going to say that this guy's trying to destroy a mother in Israel, not just a city, but a mother city in Israel, and swallow up the Lord's inheritance. And so I love verse 20. Here's Joab, the guy who just murdered a guy in cold blood. "Far be it from me," Joab replied, "far be it from me to swallow up or to destroy." Here's this guy, this evil guy, and when he doesn't think of himself as evil. He doesn't think of himself as a destroyer or someone who swallows up. He thinks he's a just guy. And she appeals to his justice side, and he responds, "That is not the case. A man named Sheba, son of Bechri, from the hill country of Ephraim, has lifted up his hand against the king, against David. Hand over this one man, and I'll withdraw from the city." The woman said to Joab, "His head will be thrown to you from the wall." Wait right there. Then the woman went to all the people with her wise advice, and they cut off the head of Sheba, son of Bichri, and threw it to Joab. So he sounded the trumpet, and his men dispersed from the city, each returning to his own home. And Joab went back to the king in Israel and to Jerusalem. So this city had one problem. Was there like great sin going on in this city that they were coming under judgment? No. The city was fine. It was a good, righteous city. It was the city of Israelites. They had just one problem in the city, and that was one rebel. His name was Sheba. And the people, you know, so they came to the proposal, if you just get rid of that one sin, that one person that's bad, your city is spared. And so earlier in Israel, before they had a king, in the time of Judges, there was some atrocity that happened, I think in Gibeon or Gibeah, and all of Israel was just astonished that some evil like this would happen. And they all marched up to the city and said, "There's some evil people in there. Give them over to us and we'll spare your city." And they wouldn't give up the evil people. The whole city got destroyed. And almost the entire tribe got destroyed because they weren't willing to give up the evil. So I think of this one person as being like sin. And this city was, with this wise woman's advice, the wise thing to do is to get rid of the sin that's going to destroy you. That one sin is going to bring down your whole city. Your whole life may be destroyed by this one sin. And the wise thing to do is to give it up. Sheba lost his head over it. So. Yeah, that's hard to do, though. It'd be great if somebody built ramparts up against your life and you knew that you were dying. You knew that you were going to be destroyed. So, but in the life of David, his one sin, his lust for women, his lust for this one woman that was forbidden to him, caused a downfall in these last 10 chapters. And all these bad things, his family falling to pieces, rebelling against him, brothers killing brothers, sisters getting raped, his concubines being taken from him, all because of this one sin. And this great warrior king, this brave, the guy who took down Goliath, is now impotent. He's impotent in the eyes of his people, impotent in the eyes of his family. And he can't hold his head up anymore. So, I question whether he was impotent or he just felt that way. If he had come forth at first and confessed his sin, and I think that's what we want as our leaders, You know, we felt that way with Bill Clinton. If he just confessed the thing and come clean with it, we would have forgiven him. We don't, you know. And no matter who our leaders are, even Eric and Rod, we have to have humans as leaders. They're not perfect. They're just like us. They have failings too. They can't keep it perfect every time. And you and I are leaders. I'm a leader of my family. You're a leader of your group or your family or your friends. So, but if you have a sin, you don't want to cover it up. You don't want to hide it, lock it up behind locked doors, throw a garment over it, act like it didn't happen. Because then that's when you lose the respect, lose the leadership that God's given you. You should confess your sins to yourself, to others, and to God. And God will forgive you. When David confessed his sin to God, when Nathan pointed it out to him, God did spare his life, but he had these other consequences from it. So, and the last little bit of part of the chapter is, you don't have too many people don't have their Bibles. Look at the last three verses, 23, 24, and 25. And I'm going to go back to chapter 9. I think it's chapter 8. The very last part of chapter 8 does the exact same thing. What they're doing is they're listing off the officials that David now has in his office. So I'm going to read chapter 8, and y'all follow along in chapter 20 and find out who's different in this list now. David reigned over all of Israel, doing what was just and right for his people. Joab, son of Zeruiah, was over all the army. Is he still over all the army in the new verse? Yep, okay. Jehoshaphat, son of Ahilud, was recorder. Is he still the recorder? Okay. Zadok, son of Ahitub, and Ahimelech, son of Abathar, were priests. Are they still the same priest? Okay. Yeah, no, there are two guys. Zadok, son of Abathar, Ahitub, and Ahimelech, son of Abathar. So they have two different priests? Oh, Abathar. Oh, so now Abathar's the priest now. Okay. And Sariah was secretary? Is Sariah? Is Sariah still there? Oh, Sheba was secretary. Oh, I see. Benaiah, son of Jahioad, was over the Kerethites and the Pelethites. Still there? And the last one, David's sons were royal advisors. They're not on the list anymore. I think the two sons that were part of his cabinet are both dead now. One killed one, and Joab killed the other one. But there's a new office. What's the new office here? Where's the new one? Oh yeah, Ira the Jerite was David's priest. That's a new one. And yes, right. And Adoniram was in charge of forced labor. Did they all say forced labor? All the translations? Revenue. Okay. Because I got the impression it was revenue, i.e., he's the tax man. Because I don't think, you know, they did have forced labor in the fact that there were some nations that David conquered, and he put those people to work and rebuild the cities that he destroyed. But I think this new one's about revenue. This is the tax man that cometh. So, and taxes are going to get heavy. So, well, that's chapter 20. So not everybody died. When Rod told me about it, he says, it's a pretty gruesome chapter. It's like, well, not everybody dies. It just seems that bad. So any questions? Nope. I'm probably early, am I? Okay.
Thanks, Jeff. Why don't we pray, guys? Let's pray. Dear God, I thank you so much just to watch as you work in messed up communities, and that you still love David and the people of Israel, even in their bad choices. And Lord, I thank you for Jeff and his offering of his heart to us. And I just ask as we step into worship of you and meditation that you would be with us and that we would have your wisdom in us. And I ask that in your name, Jesus. Amen. A couple ways to respond tonight. The first is through offering, and offering sort of works like the sign-up book, except I send it on one row, make sure it goes all the way around. The other way is we're going to have some meditation music. You can take communion if you can say that you're a follower of Jesus, and then we welcome you to do that. And also you can sing along with the music, or you can just sit quietly. But let's just spend some time together meditating and singing.